Berlin Security Beat is an original podcast produced by the Center for National Security at the Hertie School in Berlin. Welcome to the Berlin Security Beat. In one of our last episodes of the season, we're going to talk about hybrid threats, particularly how liberal democracies have been under a hybrid attack and what we can do about it. To discuss this topic, I will interview Alex Romero. Alex is the founder of the Madrid-based Alto Intelligence firm and a visiting professor at Sciences Po and one of the top European experts on hybrid threats. So without further ado, let me welcome Alex Romero.
Thank you for having me, David.
So Alex, could you begin by providing our audience with a general overview? What are hybrid threats?
So David, I like to use a definition that in a way merges three concepts from three slightly different definitions. Coming from NATO, they have a great definition of hybrid threats, the EU joint framework on countering hybrid threats, and also the definition that comes from the European Center of Excellence for Countering Hybrid Threats. In essence, hybrid threats for me are harmful coordinated activities that are planned and carried out with malign intent, with the purpose to undermine decision-making capabilities. This is the core of the definition. Hybrid threats tend to target a state or an institution, but increasingly from Alto Intelligence, we see that corporates are suffering this type of hybrid threats, mostly in the critical infrastructure sector. And I'm sure that we will be able to talk a bit more about this. I find the migration from the state governments into the corporates really, really interesting and one of the key trends we are observing. Hybrid threats also combine conventional and unconventional military and non-military activities. And normally actors driving this type of threats include a state and non-state actors that want to achieve very specific and strategic goals and objectives. Could be geostrategic goals, could be criminal or financial. When I teach to my students about hybrid threats, I like to use the example of a poisonous cocktail in which you mix, you combine different elements. For example, asymmetry is very relevant, covert and overt, coercive or subversive activities. You mix ambiguity. There is a blurring of the line between war and peace. You mix confusion. In this cocktail, manipulation of public opinion. Synchrony is very relevant because normally hybrid threats are coordinated, are of an evolving nature across multiple domains in order to achieve synergistic effects. The two most important characteristics of hybrid threats are they happen below the threshold of detection and they happen below the threshold of attribution. So even if you are able to detect that you are suffering a heavy threat attack, normally it's quite hard to do the attribution.
Thank you. That's a really great overview for our audience. Maybe I'd like to backtrack a little bit first and ask about the historical background of hybrid threats. Alex, could you provide us with some historical context on hybrid threats and how they've evolved?
That's a great question. I love it. I'm a little bit of a freak of these things. So, in the concept of hybrid threat or hybrid warfare is definitely not new. Many practitioners believe that it's as old as war itself. I have mapped some cases. For example, in some of the campaigns of Julius Caesar, there's one very interesting case of this information, which is a form of hybrid threats. The oldest case that I've been able to track goes back to the 5th century before Christ, within the conflict between Athens and Sparta. And so it's as old as that. And it is connected with an unconventional conflict, the potential rising of the helots within that conflict, for which the Spartans were not properly prepared during that war. So it's really, it is really old. And the definition we use now, the new concepts about hybrid threat go back to 2005. There was a piece, an article written by the General James Mattis and the Colonel Frank Hoffman back in 2005 called The Rise of Hybrid Wars. And this is basically kind of the reference that we have in the 21st century. But actually, the concept is probably as old as war and conflict itself.
Thank you for that. Moving back to the present moment, why do you think that hybrid threats are gaining in relevance now? And maybe also could you tell us what their evolution has looked like recently, say in the last decade?
Well, that's a great question. I think that hybrid threats are becoming more and more relevant recently as we see states increasingly employing non-state actors and information technology to subdue their adversaries. We have seen this happening during war times or conflict, but it is especially relevant in the absence of a direct armed conflict, which is, you know, mostly I would say where we are now or where we have been in the last years. There has not been a global armed conflict. We have been 70 years kind of enjoying certain geopolitical holidays, and as a result of that, because we have been mostly in a peacetime, that's why these kind of strategies have been raising in terms of relevance and importance.
Great. So can you talk a little bit more about the recent evolution of hybrid threats, please?
So, I mean, it is really interesting to go back and see what has happened in the last 10 years. Actually, just 10 years ago, in 2014, we have the initial moves of the war in Ukraine. The conflict in Ukraine has been very much connected with hybrid warfare tactics by Russia. The use of irregular armed forces, cyber attacks, economic pressure, disinformation, and in more recent campaigns, even international disinformation campaigns targeting, you know, sub-Saharan Africa, Latin America, Asia, reflect that hybrid threats have been very, very important since 2014 in that part of the world, in that conflict. Then we have the 2016 presidential election, and the campaign, as we all know now, involved a combination of cyber espionage, leaks of stolen data, manipulation of social media, propaganda by the Russians. Also, the Russians in 2018 have the poisoning of Sergei and Yulia Skripal. Unfortunately, all of us, since 2020, especially with the COVID-19 pandemic, we saw how the pandemic was being exploited by different actions to conduct hybrid warfare. Not only disinformation to create confusion and mistrust in the governments, in the institutions, but cyber attacks on the back of COVID against healthcare institutions, and even attempts to disrupt the vaccine distribution. And then more recently, in the last 10 years, but it has really gained a lot of traction, recently cyber attacks and digital espionage have been seen an increase that reflect, as we talk later about how hybrid threats can be measured and analyzed, but this reflects that hybrid threats are gaining a lot of momentum. I see three key trends in the last decade. First, the exploitation of economic dependencies at a scale. Second, the distortion of reality with a focus on the manipulation of societal polarization. And the third one is the weaponization of widespread digitalization. So obviously, digital transformation has been critical for the economies and for the societies we live in. But as digitalization becomes global, that is offering very powerful tools for actors, especially when we look at the most recent advances in artificial intelligence, in generic artificial and generative artificial intelligence. We see that a lot of the tools are becoming open source. So that means that the entry barriers for bad actors that are less sophisticated are very low. And that means that, we see and we will see a significant increase in this type of threats.
Thank you. So they're proliferating. That's not good news. So how can societies mitigate hybrid threats? I'm wondering, what strategies can we use, particularly democratic societies, to disempower adversaries who use these attacks, who use disinformation, you know, these different methods to destabilize us. What can we do?
Well, David, that's not an easy one. The reason why is, as I was saying before, the new tools, the new technologies, mostly AI, internet, have provided an unprecedented capacity for bad actors to coordinate, to increase the complexity, and to fragment their actions across multiple domains in a very effective way. Two of the most important features of hybrid threats that I mentioned before are that hybrid threats operate below the detection threshold. This means that you, as an institution, as a government, you don't even know that you're being attacked until it's likely too late. And even if you realize this, even if you realize you're suffering an attack from somebody, or you are able to detect some form of abnormality, it is many times impossible to do an effective attribution or do an attribution in time to really understand the rationale of the attack, the bad actor, to really map the TTPs, the techniques, the tactics, and the procedures, you know, and how the different components might be working together to undermine you. So, you know, this poses a big challenge in terms of what societies can do from a mitigation perspective. In general, I see three key areas in which societies, also institutions, corporates, companies need to work. First one is enhancing situational awareness. For that, they need to develop new policies, regulations, but also, you know, the ability to, you know, access data at a scale, probably from sources that they are not used to or they don't even know exist. The second one is improve deterrence and resilience. And I think we will talk about this later and the challenges in terms of implementing innovative deterrence and resilience responses. And the third one is cooperation. One of the key issues of hybrid threats is that they are coordinated across multiple domains. That requires that all sectors of society, but especially, you know, both public and private domains, collaborate and expand their collaboration into an international arena. So in summary, situational awareness, deterrence and resilience, and cooperation are, you know, three key elements that need to be taken into account.
Great. Thank you for that. Now that makes a lot of sense. So I'd like to just, yes, please.
Yeah. I can expand a little bit on this one. Do you want me to expand a little bit and then we'll record it?
Sure.
And you decide if you want to add it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So in terms of deterrence, I also want to make a point about deterrence. Because hybrid threats, you know, pose a number of challenges to traditional deterrence strategies. Now, just refreshing the audience about the concept of deterrence, the deterrence basically can be seen as making evident the result of the equation benefit, potential benefit of the attack minus the cost of the direct response of the attacked entity minus the cause or the even failure in case of escalation, right? So deterrence has been, you know, both military and economic driven deterrence have been successful to avoid military and economic attacks in the Western world in the past. However, because deterrence has been successful, I believe that, you know, this is one of the reasons why, you know, hybrid threats proliferation, it is booming, it is growing, because it has been left as the only resource to challenge the status quo, and that basically also means that we need to rethink traditional deterrence, because it is not very effective in preventing or addressing hybrid threats. Because of what I just said, hybrid threats are the only resource in a way to challenge the status quo. So I think that it's important that, you know, we think about new forms of deterrence and ways in which we increase resilience. For example, you know, I think we need to go beyond persuasion and dissuasion and you know, going harder into changing the attacker's behavior. One of the questions that I normally pose to suit my audiences when I talk about this is, to which point should we also exercise hybrid threats on those that we know are attacking us. Another one to consider, another idea to consider, is reshaping the deterrence arena for hybrid threats. There is a lot of discussion about a state to a state, you know, along the lines of my previous question, question to the audience, right? Should we exercise hybrid threats? But I think it might be interesting to change the arena of the discussion and move into more an international rules and societal discussion, raising awareness among our societies of this type of threats and what they mean. It is very important. And then finally, resilience, right? The ability of societies to prevent, withstand, and recover from hybrid threat attacks and adverse conditions is very relevant. And that requires to work across multiple types of organizations, government institutions, intelligence and security agencies, media and information institutions, educational institutions, and the private sector. So, all of that, I think these three elements need to be put in place in terms of what can be done and what should be done in order to counterbalance this type of threats.
I think that's a really interesting point, a very important point on deterrence, that hybrid threats are really an adaptation to the success of 20th century deterrence, and that it has become one of the only vectors by which some adversaries can really challenge the status quo. So we need to rethink deterrence in a fundamental way. I think that's a very important point. I want to dig in a bit deeper on the specifics for our audience. We've already addressed this somewhat, so let's see where we can get. But can you outline more specifically the different channels by which hybrid threats are transmitted?
Great. I'd like to for an audience to better understand how hybrid threat works, how hybrid threats are transmitted, what are the channels used. I recommend to look into the paper that the European Center of Excellence for Countering Hybrid Threats published about a framework to classify, understand, and share best practices around hybrid threats. It's quite a well-thought framework in which, hybrid threats, can be divided in five areas. So first, the typology of the actors, state actors, non-state actors, then the tools that the actors are using, for example, foreign direct investment or cyber espionage or cyber operations or promoting social unrest or military exercises. Then the domains in which they execute those tools. It could be infrastructure, it could be cyber, it could be culture, legal, intelligence. The typology of activity, it's for interference, it's for influence, it's for, direct war. And then the target, which is always the same, which is basically undermine decision-making capability. So the important thing here, it is that it is not only the channels, let's say the domains through which hybrid threats are exercised, but it is the combination of the type of actor, the tools that they're using, the domain, and the purpose of the activity to undermine decision-making process. Now, hybrid threats, as I said at the beginning on the definition, they really work in, through the coordination of activities across multiple domains, academic, legal, cyber. And then the actors will basically use tools in different domains to exercise, specific activities. So what people know about channels more recently are basically internet, traditional media, state-sponsored TV, obviously the internet, the online domain, both at private messaging apps or public forums, is becoming very, very relevant. But we need to think about it through the lens of frameworks like this one, in which we need to think about the domains and the tools that are being used by these actors.
Thank you for that. Moving on to my next question: if we want to better counter hybrid threats, we need to better understand them and monitor them. We need to better measure them. As you've mentioned, the scale and complexity is really bewildering right now. So my question is, how do you and how can you use data, especially at scale, to address hybrid threats, to conduct monitoring, and how can we improve monitoring of hybrid threats in our societies?
Yeah, that's a very important point, David. Using data at a scale, it is critical to address hybrid threats. digital data sources from the surface, the open internet to deep and dark web forums, are currently offering an incredible opportunity to early detect weak signals, you know, of both digital threats that are native to the online ecosystems, but as well as, you know, they're an amazing mirror to capture real-time reflections of what is happening in non-digital domains. So yes, data is critical to address heavy threats, as internet has become a sophisticated mirror of realities across multiple domains that enable us to detect, but also do the interpretation of what are the activities, the intentions of different actors that could be driving hybrid threats. However, one of the challenges that we face in the industry, and where we at Alto, we invest a huge amount of resources, it is the complexity of the data landscape. It is hugely fragmented. There is a vast amount and highly fragmented, source landscape. We have to deal with increasingly local sources, multiple languages, in which the real-time nature of the data, it is critical. So you need advanced technologies, need advanced methodologies to shift through the noise, to identify patterns, abnormal patterns, and to detect potential threats. I'll give you a recent example. So if you think about the use of AI, and I think we will talk about this in a few minutes, but if you think about deepfakes or synthetic identities, these are, cases in which all of what I said about having a data excellence, it is critical. In general, I think that, governments, corporates can improve, and this is what we see in the market, can improve through three major avenues in terms of improving monitoring. Number one is improve data acquisition capabilities in language, what I said. By the way, not only of external data, but also of internal data. So think if you are a bank and there is some form of disinformation campaign that is connecting you with a bank run. Having real-time information of internal data about retrieval of deposits can become critical to basically say, publicly, well, no, this is not an issue at all. No? So improved data acquisition, both of external data and internal data, is critical. Then the second one is apply AI for threat detection. AI and machine learning can systematically detect weak signals and can, in a way, create, a good map of what are the TTPs that can be observed. You know, AI can analyze vast data sets quickly. And if you have the right ontologies, if you have the right, training knowledge bases embeddings, you can do a lot of magic and work with the data at a scale. And then finally, and this might surprise some people in the audience, increasingly we see organizational issues when we talk to governments and corporates. So organizational adaptation, it is critical if you want to be successful, because all of the things that I just mentioned require, close coordination of data and insights across, multiple departments and areas in order to be fused in orchestrating a response. So, you might have the best data in the world, both internal and external. You might have the best ability to detect, but at the end of the day, individuals and different departments, because of the horizontal nature of hybrid threats, will need to execute. So increasingly, we see that organizational adaptation is critical, and we see also an increasing trend on the creation of fusion centers, where different areas and domains within a corporate or a government merge their knowledge, merge their insights to take them, into a more actionable and, fashion in less time, faster.
I think those are great points, especially the last point is very important. Large organizations can be quite resistant to adaptation and change as we're entering this more geopolitically high-risk environment. Things will become more challenging.
Yes, the nature of hybrid threats, because they are below the threshold of detection, because they're hard or sometimes impossible to attribute, and because they work across multiple domains, require that you need to increase the intensity, the frequency of your sampling of data, of your analysis of the data, but also you have to connect the dots about, you know, about what's going on across multiple domains. Whether you are a government or a company, you might be seeing weird signals in the legal department, in the, you know, marketing, in the online department. Connecting all of this, it is critical to understand to which point you are suffering a hybrid attack.
Right. So I have a couple questions left. So let me ask you about AI. What role can AI and large language models play in both the defensive and offensive approaches to countering hybrid threats?
You know, I think also this is a very interesting question because, you know, there is a lot of discussion about the impact of AI across many industries. I think cybersecurity, cyber intelligence is one of the few areas in which AI will be in a way playing a net impact, no? Because it's going to be used by attackers, but it will be used by defenders. I think that attackers are already using, and this is very well documented by the recent OpenAI covert influence operations report. LLMs are already being used for deceptive synthetic content, automating social engineering attacks, creating synthetic profiles. The report from OpenAI indicates a number of target countries like Ukraine, Moldova, United States, the Baltic states, across multiple languages, English, French, German, Italian, Chinese, Japanese, even Korean, and multiple digital and social media networks. So definitely it is already being used by attackers and it's being used by defenders. So we use it to detect some of these attacks. We use it also to identify insider threats. And we use it also to support some of the training and awareness programs of our clients. So this is being used. Where I see that the key issue is in the LLMs themselves. Let's not forget that the LLMs, like any technology, have also potential vulnerabilities. So adversarial attacks, data poisoning, model theft, even, you know, the vulnerabilities connected with the infrastructure in which the LLMs run. All of this reflects that the LLMs themselves will need very robust defensive frameworks to be also protected against bad actors. So huge area of interest for us, and I think growth in the industry.
Great, thank you. That makes a lot of sense. Final question. Looking to the future, what future trends do you foresee in the realm of hybrid threats and cybersecurity? Where are we headed?
Well, I think from a hybrid threats perspective, we are heading into more exploitation of economic dependencies. You know, this is from a hybrid threat perspective. This is a very powerful domain in which to extern influence and achieve strategic objectives. And we have seen this with gas in Europe and Nord Stream, and we will see that increasingly across other economic activities and dependencies going forward. I think that the second area where I see a lot of potential in the future is distortion of reality. So technology, and we were talking about deep fakes, synthetic identities, synthetic content in general, can be used to distort reality and to really destroy the concept of a shared reality, right? And when that happens, manipulation at a scale of polarization is relatively simple, right? Polarization can be a very strong tool to achieve strategic goals, to avoid that the attacked societies can take the right decisions. And then the third one, I think, is in general, weaponization of widespread digitalization. What I mean by this is that the digital tools that are already available because we are open sourcing them, for example, in connection with AI, are lowering the entry barrier for less sophisticated actors. And I personally believe we're not really talking about this. We're not really thinking about this a lot because these entry barriers are being lowered for everybody. So for good guys, but also for bad guys. So exploitation of economic dependencies, distortion of reality, and the lowering the barrier of access to some sophisticated tools, you know, I believe are three key trends we're seeing in the hybrid threat space. And they connect very strongly with what we see in cybersecurity, you know, cybersecurity being one of the key domains in the hybrid threats world, because we see increasing use of artificial intelligence in the attack. We see increasing role of cyber during times of crisis. And we see a growth in the dependencies between policy and technology and the increasing regulatory pressure in this space. But again, you know, I wonder to which point this is fast enough for the type of threat and the velocity at which the bad actors are moving.
Great. Thank you for that. And thank you for appearing on our podcast, Alex Romero.
David, thank you to you. Thank you for your work and thank you for having me today.
And that's all for today. Thank you all for tuning in. We have one final episode coming out for you soon, one that will cover German cyber diplomacy. It's a very exciting episode that will wrap up this season. We hope you had a great time. This podcast is brought to you by the Center for International Security at the Hertie School in Berlin. If you're interested in a master's degree with a concentration on international security, please check out the Hertie School's Master's of International Affairs. Until next time, this is David Bukowski coming to you from Berlin.